This is VOA News via remote. I'm Liz Pelka. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says he has heard Russian military action could begin on Wednesday, proclaiming the day as one of national unity. Speaking in a video address to the nation Monday, he did not say how he got the information. A NATO official characterized the tense standoff with Russia at the Ukraine border as a dangerous moment for European security. The official saying a major conflict in Ukraine could see large numbers of displaced people fleeing the fighting. But they said there is still time to avoid such unnecessary suffering, saying, quote, everything must be done to avoid this kind of an impact on civilians. Also on Monday, the White House said U.S. President Joe Biden spoke with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson about their efforts to upgrade NATO's defensive posture on the alliance's eastern flank closest to Russia. With the threat of a Russian attack on Kyiv, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the United States was temporarily relocating its embassy operations to the western Ukrainian city of Lviv near the Polish border. State Department spokesman Ned Price said Lviv offers greater protection if Russian troops invade Ukraine. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said Monday that Western countries are ready for a serious dialogue with Russia on European security issues after meeting with President Zelensky in Kyiv. He also said Western countries are looking for Russian President Vladimir Putin to de-escalate the threat of an imminent invasion. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov suggested to the Russian president that he continue talks with the U.S. and NATO countries. This is VOA News. Brazil's President Jair Bolsonaro headed to Russia on Monday evening, despite Western warnings the country could soon invade Ukraine. That's frustrating those who have suggested he cancel Monday's trip, including the U.S. government and members of his own cabinet. The trip was planned well before the Ukraine crisis arose, and Bolsonaro says his focus is on bilateral trade with an important economic partner. But even some of his allies fear Bolsonaro could make damaging comments on the crisis or that his presence could be seen as tacit support for a Russian invasion of its neighbor. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau invoked emergency powers to stop demonstrations that have paralyzed the capital and blocked border crossings in protest over the country's COVID-19 restrictions. Trudeau made the announcement in an address to the nation Monday after meeting virtually with the leaders of Canada's provinces. The Prime Minister calling the blockades illegal and added, if you are still participating, the time to go home is now. The Freedom Convoy protests were started by Canadian truckers who opposed a COVID-19 vaccinate or quarantine mandate by the government. The demonstrations have since attracted protesters angry about other pandemic restrictions, as well as the policies of Trudeau's administration. President Joe Biden came into office with a plan to fix inflation, but not the particular inflationary problem that the United States now faces. His belief is that a cluster of companies control too many industries, which reduces competition for both customers and workers. That leads to higher prices and lower wages. The White House says that costs an average of $5,000 annually for U.S. families. President Biden is now trying to remedy the situation with 72 distinct initiatives. But even administration officials acknowledge that the initiatives outlined by the president's Competition Council won't stop the 7.5% inflation that's frustrating Americans and damaging the president's popularity. After 6 months in power, the acting defense minister of Afghanistan's Taliban government announced plans to build a 110,000-strong army for Afghanistan. Mullah Mohammad Yaqub told Radio Television Afghanistan in his first ever television interview that the Taliban leadership has approved the plan for the building of the new army. Yaqub said the registration for the new army has reached almost 80,000. And he added that 10,000 soldiers have already graduated from training. Via remote, I'm Liz Pelka, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, February 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedwafo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. officials say Russian military continues attack preparations along Ukraine's border.
Adding some more fuel to the speculation, the Ukrainian president put out a Facebook video earlier on Monday saying that the invasion could happen on Wednesday, February 16th.
More political chaos in Libya as the country's eastern-based parliament elects a new prime minister.
It would be dark days indeed if we return to the situation whereby Libya has two prime ministers and two rival governments, as prevailed between 2014.
An intergovernmental panel begins meeting on human adaptation to climate change. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. officials say the Russian military has continued apparent attack preparations along Ukraine's borders. They say small numbers of Russian ground units have been moving out of larger assembly areas for several days, taking up positions closer to the Ukrainian border at what would be departure points if Putin launched an invasion. This as Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced a relocation of embassy operations in Ukraine from the capital Kyiv to the western city of Lviv on Monday, citing, quote, the dramatic acceleration in the buildup of Russian forces, unquote. The Pentagon and NATO are keeping a wary eye on the movement of Russian forces, and last-ditch diplomatic efforts have intensified to avert an invasion. For more, I spoke with VOA's national security correspondent, Jeff Seldon.
National security officials and officials at the Pentagon have been clear since late last week that they say that Russia has placed enough forces, they say more than 100,000 troops. Other estimates by U.S. allies have put the number at closer to 130,000 Russian troops around the border with Ukraine in Crimea and in Belarus. And they've been cleared that an invasion, should Russia decide to go down that path, could happen any day now. Adding some more fuel to this fire and more fuel to the speculation, the Ukrainian president put out a Facebook video earlier on Monday saying that he's been told that the invasion could happen on Wednesday, February 16th, and said Ukraine is going to make that a day of national unity. But there are growing concerns at the Pentagon, and the Pentagon spokesman said Monday that even in the last 24 to 48 hours, the U.S. has seen Russia put additional capabilities along its border with Ukraine in Belarus as well that could indicate an attack, an invasion of Ukraine is forthcoming.
What about the security of Americans? We know that the president has asked Americans to leave Ukraine, and the U.S. embassy is moving, is relocating from Kyiv.
The Pentagon hasn't commented much about this other than to say there is still a small presence of U.S. military forces in Ukraine in support of diplomatic personnel that are still in the country. The State Department earlier on Monday did announce that it is temporarily, in the State Department's words, shutting down operations at its embassy in Kyiv and moving into Lviv due to what it called, quote, the dramatic acceleration in the buildup of Russian forces. And in that statement where it talked about the embassy, the State Department also reiterated its call for any U.S. citizens that are still in Ukraine to leave the country immediately. So that call is still going out. Other Western countries have also been urging their citizens to leave Ukraine in case Russia decides to invade. And again, the U.S. had said if that happens, U.S. troops will not be going into Ukraine to help any Americans evacuate. Americans who choose to stay in Ukraine, according to officials, in the case of a Russian invasion, will be on their own in terms of getting out of the country.
Are American forces still going in and around Ukraine, in Poland, in Belarus, in those areas, or have that stopped?
The U.S. and the Pentagon have announced that there are forces that were going in to reassure U.S. allies, most specifically Poland. The most recent announcements talking about another 1,700 U.S. troops headed to Poland. They were supposed to be there or will be in place at the end of early this week. So in the coming days, if they're not there already, the Pentagon on Monday said that those troops are there to reassure U.S. allies like Poland and others in the region. Other troops were going to Germany as well. But their role is to help those countries should it be necessary. And in the case of Poland, help with any refugee flows coming to Poland or evacuees that are streaming from Ukraine into Poland in the case that Russia does decide to invade and you have a need for a humanitarian response. The Pentagon, though, reinforced on Monday that those troops will remain in Poland and that they will not be drawn in to any conflict in Ukraine itself.
The Pentagon is sounding the alarm that an invasion can come any minute now, but the Ukrainian president is talking about people who have left to come back and that there's nothing to worry about. How does this square off with the messaging of the Pentagon?
The message that the Ukrainian president put up on Facebook, in which he said that they were told that an invasion could happen on the 16th, calling for a day of unity. The Pentagon VOA asked about that and said, look, the Ukrainian president doesn't have to run things by the U.S., but both the Pentagon and the State Department have said that they've been sharing information honestly and openly with U.S. partners, including with Ukraine. And again, the U.S. line on this has been consistent, that the buildup of Russian troops around the border with Ukraine, in Belarus, in Crimea as well, is worrisome, that those forces have been increasing and that there is increasingly a likelihood that Russia is going to choose a military option. But even on Monday, at the Pentagon and at the State Department and even from the White House, officials have been reminding Russia and Russian President Vladimir Putin that there is still a chance for diplomacy to take hold, for diplomacy to be the path out of this, and for Russia to make the call to de-escalate. Whether or not Russia is going to do that remains to be seen.
That's VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Seldon speaking with me from Washington. The White House ordered U.S. military trainers out of Ukraine in the same week it reduced embassy personnel there to, quote, bare bones, unquote, with at least 100,000 Russian troops encircling Ukraine. Washington says an invasion could be, quote, any day now, unquote. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the story.
Russian and Belarusian forces take part in joint military drills in Belarus. Ukraine's neighbor to the north is now one of the staging grounds for at least 100,000 Russian troops amassed along the border with Ukraine. Russia maintains it has no intention of invading Ukraine, but top U.S. officials warn otherwise. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan speaking Sunday on CNN's State of the Union.
The way they have built up their forces, the way they have maneuvered things in place, makes it a distinct possibility that there will be major military action very soon. And we are prepared to continue to work on diplomacy, but we are also prepared to respond in a united and decisive way with our allies and partners should Russia proceed.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin Saturday spoke by phone, and the White House tweeted Biden's warning of swift and severe cost if Russia invades its neighbor. The phone call reportedly did little to ease tensions. U.S. lawmakers have voiced concern about the situation. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham on ABC's This Week warned of lasting damage should Russia invade.
This is not the last president America will have. If Russia invades the Ukraine, you will destroy the U.S.-Russian relationship for decades, and every president in the near term will be put in a box when it comes to dealing with Russia. So I hope Putin understands that.
While the Kremlin says it has no plans to invade Ukraine, the Russian Defense Ministry said more than 30 ships from its Black Sea fleet recently set sail to practice naval maneuvers. Just a short trip north to the Sea of Azov, there's a small contingent of East Ukrainian border guards in small ships. They are no match for the Russian Navy. Ukraine lost much of its navy when Russia illegally annexed Crimea in 2014. The United States pulled most embassy personnel from Kyiv and issued warnings to Americans to get out of Ukraine. The White House also pulled the troops who've been training Ukrainian forces, reportedly reassigning them within Europe, where, according to the Department of Defense, they'll soon be joined by another 3,000 troops from the 82nd Airborne Division. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Russia's top diplomat has advised President Vladimir Putin to continue talks with the West on Russian security demands amid the tensions over Ukraine. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Speaking at the start of a meeting with Putin, Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov has suggested Moscow should continue talks with the US and its allies, even though they've rejected the main Russian security demands. He noted that the US has offered to conduct dialogue on limits for missile deployments in Europe, restrictions on military drills, and other confidence-building measures. Asked by Putin if it makes sense to continue diplomatic efforts, Lavrov responded that possibilities for talks haven't been exhausted and proposed to continue the negotiations. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Afghanistan had a thriving news and entertainment media landscape before the Taliban took over the country 6 months into the Taliban government. VOA's Aisha Tanzin takes stock on how the media scene has changed.
This is what entertainment channels in Afghanistan looked like under the previous regime. Not anymore. The Taliban are asking them to change their output. Hadi Sahar is a senior producer in an Afghan TV channel called One TV.
Islamic Emirate officials asked us to ban all of the serials that was aired from One TV.
So what have you replaced the serials with?
Right now it is replaced with Iranian serials, yeah.
And why are Iranian serials more acceptable?
Because they say it is Islamic and they reserve the hijab, and people like this kind of serials, according to Taliban or Islamic Emirate officials.
Popular live music shows on TV are now off the air. In the last 6 months, in-house entertainment production in most channels has come to a grinding halt. This room used to be the production hub of One TV's entertainment programming. That has all ended. Now the women sitting here are trying to figure out how to produce Islamic programming that meets the Taliban's requirements. When it comes to news, many journalists tell VOA self-censorship has become the norm under the new Taliban regime. They would not dare criticize the government or its performance like they did during the previous regime. No one wanted to say it on the record out of fear. Female journalists face their own set of issues, says Fakhriya Radfar, a reporter for Tolo News Channel.
مثلا ما آزادانه به صورت قبلا میتونستیم خودمون به تنهایی بریم به یک پوشش خبری، اما حال وقتی جایی که میریم خصوصا بعضی ریاست خانه‌ها، وزارت خانه‌ها هستن، ریاست‌ها هستن که خانم‌ها اجازه ندارن وارد شون.
The Taliban have also told female anchors on news channels to change their appearance. According to Sana Amiri, a news anchor on One TV.
قبل از امارات اسلامی با آمدن ریکار آمدن نیروهای امارات اسلامی در افغانستان خب معلوم دارست چون یک سلسله شرایط اونا داشتن که خانمایی که در روی میدیا کار میکنن در روی پرده ظاهر میشن اونا باید حجاب کامل اسلامی را مراعات کنن چون قبلا ما حجاب داشتیم یعنی قسم نبود که اونا بخواین سر از اونا فی بگیرن یا از این موضوعات اما قسم بود که فقط 4 ماه کمک پس بود یعنی ما فعلا حالا مجبور هستیم که مکمل فول چینج کنیم خدا و حجاب کامل اسلامی را چون که فعلا حکومت به دست از اونا است و یکی از شرایط از اونا اونا
Still, the Taliban seem to be giving people time to adjust. Some Afghan radio and TV channels still air music, although far less than before. A few foreign entertainment programs featuring women without their heads covered continue to be on air. The media's troubles include a flight of both capital and talent from the country. When the Taliban took over, most of the famous entertainers and journalists left the country. Foreign funding and ad revenue dried up. The channels are now struggling to survive with far less money and far more restrictions. According to an International Federation of Journalists survey, more than 300 Afghan media outlets have shut due to financial problems and Taliban restrictions. Thousands of media professionals have lost their jobs, 70% of them women. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kabul.
The country is tense after an attempted coup in Guinea-Bissau on February 1st. There have been more than a dozen coups or coup attempts in the West African country since its independence. Sociologist Dautarin Da Costa spoke with Ricky Shryak about impunity, in part due to an inconsistent justice system.
You can see it, the problems with the system, because people don't trust in the system. They don't trust because we have the sense that we cannot have the true justice through this system.
Why don't they trust it?
I think they passed the idea they are corrupt. If you have power in this society, maybe you can have good decisions for your own interests. Most of the people thinks that if you don't have money and if you don't have power or influence somehow, you cannot have a good justice.
And where do people go? Where do they think they can go? Or what do they think they can trust in to get good justice? Or is there a structure they feel they can't use?
I think most of the most of the people try at the first level, they try to solve their own problems with following alternative ways. It depends of the, if we are talking about something not too serious, you can call someone who can mediate the problem. Because our cultural system, we have a lot of respect for the elders. Yes, so sometimes they help mediating some situations. And if you have something serious and you are out of Bissau, maybe you can ask for another kind of intervention. That is normal. When you go to the legal system, when you ask help through the legal system, it's because you don't have another kind of alternatives.
And do you think the lack of the legal, quote-unquote, legal system, centralized legal system, that no one believes in it, does that, what kind of influence, what kind of impact does that have on the stability of the country, on the, what kind of ramifications does it have on things such as what happened in February 1st?
Yes, we have the sense that here in Guinea-Bissau, if you have power and if you have enough money, you have impunities. The only way you can lose that impunity is that you can lose it if your adversary, if he has more power than you. So, because our system, we know a lot of stories about judges or other kind of legal actors. We have more, a lot of them, they receive something in exchange of their legal decisions, yes.
That's sociologist Daltarin Da Costa speaking with reporter Ricky Schreier from Bissau. In other news, Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett arrived in Bahrain's capital Manama on Monday in the highest level visit since the country's established relations under a 2020 U.S.-sponsored deal based in part on shared worries about Iran. Bennett will meet Bahrain Crown Prince and Prime Minister Salman bin Hamad Al Khalifa, his office said. The two-day trip to Bahrain, home of the U.S. Navy Gulf's headquarters, comes amid heightened tensions after missile attacks on the neighboring United Arab Emirates by Yemen's Iran-allied Houthis. Israel also normalized ties with the UAE in 2020. Israel has stepped up cooperation with the Gulf states. Manama hosted Israel's defense minister on February 2nd and has said an Israeli military officer will be posted in Bahrain as part of an international coalition. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, has begun a two-week meeting to consider a report that assesses the impact of the world's changing climate and how humans might adapt. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Hundreds of scientists meeting virtually will lay out the latest evidence on how past and future changes to the Earth's climate system are affecting the planet. The report under review is the second of three installments that will comprise the IPCC's sixth assessment report, which will be released later this year. In August, the scientific body approved the first contribution of Working Group 1, which dealt with the physical science basis of climate change. The second part, currently under review, highlights the role of social justice and diverse forms of knowledge, such as indigenous and local knowledge, might play to strengthen climate change action and reduce the risks. The chair of the IPCC, Ho-Sung Lee, says the report focuses on solutions and productive areas for action.
It will be more strongly integrate the natural, social, and economic sciences, and it will provide policymakers with sound data and knowledge to help them shape policies and make decisions. The need for the Working Group 2 report has never been greater. because the stakes have never been higher.
The United Nations-backed IPCC was established in 1988 to provide political leaders with periodic scientific assessments regarding climate change. The panel previously issued 5 assessment reports that spotlighted climate change as an issue of growing global importance. The Paris Agreement on climate change calls for limiting human-induced global warming to well below 2 degrees Celsius, preferably 1.5 degrees Celsius, above pre-industrial levels. The IPCC warns that mark will be exceeded this century unless drastic action is taken. Secretary General of the World Meteorological Organization, Petteri Talas, says weather-related disasters have been increasing dramatically over the past 2 decades. He says vulnerable areas in tropical latitudes, especially in Africa, Southern Asia, and the Pacific, are suffering the worst impacts of climate-driven disasters. He says he often uses a sports analogy to communicate the seriousness of climate change to humanity.
We have at the moment the Winter Olympics going on in China. We have high-performing athletes, and if you give them doping, then they perform even more effectively. So that's what we have done to the atmosphere. We have been doping the atmosphere.
The contribution by Working Group 3 dealing with the mitigation of climate change will be finalized in April. The concluding synthesis of IPCC's 6th assessment report will be made in September. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Science in a Minute.
For years, astronomers thought that only black holes with powerful radiation are strong enough to stop star formation within its host galaxy. A team of researchers suggest in their new study that a weaker black hole appears to be clearing out potentially star-forming gas in a galaxy in the constellation Perseus. The researchers say they found that while this black hole doesn't emit visible light, ultraviolet, or X-rays like those that are more powerful, it does have bright radio plasma jets that seem to be flushing away the surrounding gas. According to the study, the weak black hole is blowing away about 5 to 10 solar masses of the gas per year at a speed of about 500 kilometers per second. The researchers say the gas, after a few million years, eventually gathers at the edges of the galaxy where it is still not able to form stars. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series, education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu in Washington, wishing you a great day.